So this is the Subcommittee of Ways and Means for Information Technology, and this is March 24th, and I have to look to see if that's really right. And I'm going to call the meeting to order. And Sean, tell us what's going on.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. Today we have the Oregon Health Authority and Department of Human Services. They're going to be giving us an information technology overview of the agency. We have with us Kristen Deuce, who serves as the Joint Chief Information Officer for both agencies, and Sarah Miller, who serves as the DHS Chief Operating Officer for Technology. If you'd like to come to the table, and again, please remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Miller. I am the Department of Human Services Chief Operating Officer for Technology, and I've been in that position since January of 2015. In this capacity, I'm a direct report to Aaron Kelly Seal, the Director of the Department of Human Services, and my role for the agency is threefold. First, it's my job to be a subject matter expert and help the five program directors establish IT efforts and run them in a appropriate way. Second, I perform a vendor management function for the Department of Human Services to make sure that our IT service providers, both the Office of Information Services internally and our large vendors, external vendors for projects, perform in a way that meets DHS's business needs. And third, for a limited number of projects, I actually act in a governance capacity, either as the project sponsor or a member of the steering committee. What I am not, however, is DHS's Chief Information Officer. And in fact, at the table with me today is Kristen Deuce, who serves as the CIO for both the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. I'm going to ask Kristen to tell you a little bit about her experience.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Deuce. I am the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. I am a new face to most of you. I came to DHS OHA in September of this last year. I came from the Sam Kaiser Public Schools, which is the second largest of Oregon school districts, where I was the IT director. I am a local and a native Oregonian, and in fact, my great-grandfather was a member of the House of Representatives in the 1911 Oregon legislature. I came to, prior to my 8 years with Sam Kaiser, I worked for 17 years for what was then the Department of Human Services. I worked my way up from a programmer to a project manager to the manager of our projects office, and when I left, I was the Deputy Chief Information Officer. And with that, I'm going to turn it over. I'm going to go through, I guess, our topics today. We are pleased to be here today to share with you an overview of the DHS OHA Office of Information Services. You'll probably hear us also refer to it as OIS. And a little bit about the programs that we support. We'll tell you a little bit about how we're organized in OIS and a little bit about our budget. And then we're going to share some of our challenges and our opportunities. At the end of the presentation, we'll share some information about some of our current projects this biennium and then what is proposed for 2015-2017. And with that, I'll turn it over to Sarah to get us started.
In order to understand the Office of Information Service as a shared service for both DHS and OHA, you need to understand their agency missions. Both agencies have had well-defined missions for several years now. For DHS, it's safety, health, and independence for all Oregonians. Those words around the statement are key values that DHS demonstrates in the work that it does. For the Oregon Health Authority, it's the triple aim: better care at lower cost, creating better health for Oregonians. As a shared service, one thing has remained solid. The Office of Information Services mission is to provide technology solutions that enable the business objectives of both agencies. We start our IT overview with this representation because both agencies view the Office of Information Services as an important service provider. And it's our collective vision, both on the business side and with Kristen, that OIS will excel in customer service that they deliver to business programs. In terms of the programs that we serve and the scale of complexity for the Office of Information Services, as you can see from this slide, together DHS and OHA have almost 12,000 employees across 184 office locations. There are literally hundreds of systems to support these nine program areas across the three agencies. With the recent changes in new leadership, OHA has a new director. I'm in a new position for the Department of Human Services. Kristen is in a new role as the CIO. There's a strong commitment to partnership between the agency business areas and OIS. Kristen sits as a valued member of both agency leadership teams, and we work together, and Kristen does this also with the COO for OHA, very closely to address issues that arise, and maybe more importantly, to lay the foundation to prevent and be proactive for future issues occurring. This slide represents OIS's budget in the governor's budget for 15-17. But before these numbers make any sense to you, you have to understand what's not in this number. This slide does not represent the amount that either agency spends on large IT projects. Those costs are budgeted in the program areas for either agency. It also doesn't represent the cost that either agency pays for centralized IT infrastructure. Charges to the state data center, for example, are paid out of a central assessment pool. So OIS's budget inside of the Oregon Health Authority is predominantly associated with costs relative to the positions that they have that do this work. You can see in the lower right-hand corner, 460.51 FTE, 469 positions. So 75% of their budget is people cost. There are a limited number of expenditures around software maintenance and printing services. Those are for print jobs that are done in support of program areas in coordination with the print plant, as an example, or for technical training for IT staff and IT consulting inside of OIS together. So when we talk about partnership between the Office of Information Services and the two agencies work together from a business perspective to set a strategic technology plan. And we identified needs that needed to be considered as part of the strategic plan for the go forward. So the box you see on the left is a representation of some of those needs. Things like data that needs to be able to cross systems in our service to clients. Automation of workflow so that workers can rely on technology to do parts of their job that have been in the past manually intensive. The one down there that says self-directed services, that's about making technology available to Oregonians, customers, so that they can use themselves interacting with technology and a self-service, get direct access to services from the agency. And so collectively, at the end of a planning process in June of 2013, we built a strategic technology plan.
So over on the right-hand side of the slide, you'll see the five strategies that were identified in support of the business needs. And for example, the comprehensive view of clients. This helps us as we're planning and building our systems to keep in mind that we have many of our clients receive services from multiple program areas, and we need to build systems that have the ability to show a comprehensive view of these clients. So there's five strategies listed down here on the right, and I'll let you go ahead and take a look at them, but I'm not going to read them to you. So we use this strategic plan to help us to plan for the future, and we'll continue to build on it as we go forward. When I started with DHS in 1987, we wrote programs in COBOL using dumb terminals connected to a mainframe. Many of those systems still exist today, and yet the expectations of our users have evolved. I now can order and pay for my Starbucks latte in advance using my phone. I run into the store and they have it waiting for me on the counter. No lines, no waiting, no in-store transactions. I get my boarding pass on my phone when I fly. I pay my bills electronically and I do my banking online. The world of technology has changed many times over since 1987. And yet my staff are still maintaining many of the same systems that I wrote and maintained 27 years ago. Many of the systems we support are old and inflexible and require constant care and repair. They were built at a time when we weren't thinking about interoperability, big data, or anywhere, anytime access. Our users are frustrated. Our clients have many needs, and our caseworkers must navigate between multiple systems. We live in the age of data to inform decisions, for analytics, research, metrics, and sharing. And yet, our systems were not built for easy data access. This is our reality. But despite these limitations, we can't forget that these systems determine eligibility, track immunizations, enroll clients in Medicaid, and many other vital functions. These are the systems that our users rely on every day to serve the citizens of Oregon and many of the state's most vulnerable populations. It's our job in OIS to make sure that these systems continue to run and that they are secure. We are faced every day with the challenge of balancing the work of keeping these existing systems running and operational with that of what we call the new work. It's the new work that allows us to modernize our systems, provide solutions that are flexible and can be used in ways that our workers work today and our clients want to be served. It is the new work that will allow us to get to an enterprise architecture, to have integrated systems, and to be able to provide easy and appropriate access to the data we collect and manage. This next slide is a depiction of the units within the Office of Information Services. We have an Office of the CIO, Business Engagement Services. This is our organization with 40, we have 42 positions in this unit, and this unit is the first point of contact for our customers. And so it is in this group that we have what you might term as customer service representatives that really work with our customers to identify what solutions they that might meet their needs. We also have our project managers report into this office, and we have a reporting function here for all of the myriad of reports we have to do to our federal funding partners and many others. Enterprise alignment and design, these are our enterprise architects, and we also have a testing team that helps kind of from a testing expertise perspective. Application development and maintenance, you can see that this is the largest of our areas. This is the team that are maintaining and doing enhancements to our existing systems. Customer service and support, 162 positions. These are the folks that are out there doing the desktop maintenance. This is our help desk. We have a help desk that that is the first point of contact for many of our customers, and we take about 10,000 calls every month through our help desk. Business operations, this is, as it says, are the business operations of OIS, and so these are the folks that do our budget and our purchasing and help us with hiring and the normal business functions. And then, of course, we have an information security and privacy office, and it is out of this office that we do awareness and education. We do constant monitoring of the vulnerability of our systems and help to protect our data. I thought quite a bit about what I might share with you in regards to challenges. There are some very easy and obvious ones, a few of which we've shared with you already. We're big and we are complex, so making change sometimes feels like turning the Titanic. We support applications that are written in a complex array of languages, many of them older than the technicians that are maintaining them. It's a challenge finding the skill sets we need, attracting candidates, and retaining the staff we have. But when I ask my customers what the challenges are and what they need from their technology service provider, I hear a slightly different story. My customers are the staff and partners of OHA and DHS and the clients they serve. In DHS, my customers are the frontline workers working with clients every day to provide the myriad of services such as adoption, foster and child care services, and many others. In OHA, my customers, for example, are the nurses and hospitals at the Oregon State Hospital. I have consistently heard from my customers that they need the following five things that are shown up here in this slide from their IT service provider. Governance, IT governance. They need to know how to request work from OIS, And they need to know that the work that we are doing is aligned with business priorities. Project management. They need us to deliver IT solutions on time, on budget, and to scope. They need us to be consistent in how we deliver our services, from project to project, from program to program, and from technician to technician. They need us to deliver a quality product, and they need us to be transparent about the work that we are doing and when there are issues. The chevrons at the bottom, are we on the right one? Okay. This year will be a rebuilding year for us, and we have an improvement plan for each of these areas. And we're already actually in process of executing on several of these. So the first one around governance, in its simplest form, governance is about how work comes into us and how it's prioritized. We're in the process of implementing a governance structure for both agencies, OHA and DHS, and Sarah's going to talk to this a little bit later in the presentation. Around project management, we're implementing the use of one.
Different question. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. When you start talking about prioritization, I mean, how do you go about doing that? I'm thinking particularly of the request made by the legislature in 2013 to speed up the ability to credential health professionals. We just extended that request because it has not yet been done. That is, for rural Oregon, a huge priority in that the clinics that hire people in rural Oregon often hire temporary employees. And if they're there for 6 to 9 months and it takes from 12 to 18 months to get their credentialed, the patients end up paying about 40% more for their copay. And yet, 2 years later, we're still thinking about getting ready to get started. Maybe you could address that.
Yes. Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt. We're going to go into more details around IT governance. In fact, I believe it's our next slide. So if you want to hold off, if you can hold off just one moment, and we'll go into some more details for you about how we do our prioritizations in both agencies.
Sure.
Okay. So around project management, we're implementing the use of one consistent, repeatable methodology for managing our projects. We'll have clear roles and responsibilities, and the artifacts from our projects, things like business cases, feasibility studies, and project plans, will be consistent from one project to the next. And we're going to talk a little bit more about project management a little further in the presentation as well. The next area up here is consistency. And again, our customers expect consistency in the services that they receive from us. And then communications, as with most, quality product. So we're strengthening our work around requirements gathering to make sure that the solutions that we are delivering meet the business needs. And we're also implementing defined testing practices to ensure that the products that we deliver are bug-free. Like many large organizations, we have an opportunity to improve our communications, and we'll be focusing on communications both internal to the Office of Information Services, as well as the communications that we do with our customers, both OHA and DHS, so that they have a comprehensive view of the work that we're doing, the status of the work that we're doing, and what's coming down the pipe next. The chevrons at the bottom of the slide show the steps that we're taking to implement these changes, so establish, implement, monitor and measure, and then improve and optimize. And we're doing that across all five of these improvement areas.
You heard Kristen describe that IT governance has been a high priority issue for both agencies. And what this picture shows you is the structure that we're in the process of adopting to ensure transparency and accountability for IT efforts. Before I walk you through the process, I'd like to respond to Senator Whitsitt's question, which is that I think both agencies have found themselves in a firefighting mode. They have not had a consistent, standardized way to make prioritization decisions. We don't gather consistent information about those efforts in order to be able to compare, for example, the Common Credentialing Project with other priorities of the Oregon Health Authority. And so this is a brand new process. I think it seeks to do what you're asking for, Senator Whitsitt, and I think that you can expect, as both agencies come to this committee in the future, that we'll be able to articulate the exact criteria in which we use to prioritize each of the IT investments that are being made.
Follow up, please.
I appreciate your efforts to reorganize your agency's efforts. Meanwhile, my constituents are still paying 40% more for much of their medical care, because they can't get something that is nothing more than a bookkeeping determination, whether the physician actually has the education, is licensed, has the specialty, nurse practitioners, PAs, and RNs, radiologists, and so forth. Ms. Miller, it's not rocket science. This has been going on for 2 years. We have people that are, in pretty dire economic straits that are not able to receive the benefits that they deserve, because they are paying up to 40% more for copay, because the same person that is giving the care is not credentialed.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I hear you. I understand your frustrations.
So
and
can you fix it? I'm asking.
Senator, Kristen Deuce and I are here today because we believe that this process sets forth the foundations. And in specific regard to the individual project that you're talking about, that's a project of the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm a DHS person. But I believe that OHA leadership is committed to using this process to make sure that we take the limited resources that the agencies have available and we share them to advance the business priorities of both agencies. So yes, I think we're working
with
on
respect,
it.
Ms. Miller, your combined budgets are $28 billion. So we're not asking for a lot. Maybe we could talk offline about this. Maybe we could meet in my office and you could bring somebody for OHA and maybe we can get this fixed.
Sure. Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, we'd be happy to have a
Thank
follow-up
you.
Meeting, and I'll take the action item to get
Thank
that
you.
Scheduled.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This slide shows for you the structure that we're characterizing about how we make sure that we have consistent information about all IT efforts that either the Oregon Health Authority or the Department of Human Services are considering work. If you start on the far left side, that this shows is meant to represent that ideas for work come from business areas. Either you all as the legislative branch ask us to do things, our federal funding partners have new business requirements. Sometimes we get ideas from people who are doing the day-to-day work about ways that the technology could work better. And so business generates a need. There is a business change request form that gathers consistent information about that need. One of the things that I think neither agency has done particularly well in the past is articulate a real business case for why we need to make necessarily some of these investments. And so the business change request form starts to do that. We have a limited pool of resources inside of OIS, and so the business has responsibility to be clear about the work that we ask OIS to do for us. And so that third box shows you that business prioritization is the first exercise. Before we ever ask OIS to help us prepare an estimate of how much work a technology effort would take, we make sure that it's an actual priority for decision makers inside of either agency. Then we go to intake and assessment, and we gather standard information at a requirements level that allows for high-level estimates about how much effort is going to be done. It considers business need, complexity of what's being proposed, feasibility of actually starting it and completing it, and then results in a prioritization recommendation. The middle section, governance, shows you that there are three levels of governing bodies. So inside of individual program areas, so in my agency, it's aging and people with disabilities, or it is our self-sufficiency programs, there are program-level governing bodies, which look at requests that are minor modifications, regular enhancements to systems, or that can be done with existing resources, either in people or in money. If an effort is estimated to be 800 hours or more, or estimated to cost between $150,000 and $1 million, it has to go to either agency's IT governing body. And a evaluation is done of that request against all other large projects in the agency, and that's the way that we make sure that there is consistency in what we ask from our service provider. We need to be able to tell Kristen, these are the highest priority projects, sort of regardless of program, on behalf of the agency. And then because OIS is a shared service between the two agencies, sometimes we have to have conversations about priorities for things that are in service to programs for both agencies, or that are really kind of extra large. Greater than 2,000 hours of work or greater than $1 million of investment. We need to be having those prioritization conversations across agency boundaries. And so in all three cases, each governing body at their own level can make decisions to approve those requests and prioritize them. If they're approved, it basically goes into a work queue. If it's a project and meets the threshold of project, then we do the standard project stage gate artifacts that are required. If it's just an enhancement effort and doesn't meet a project threshold, it goes into a queue for operations and maintenance staff to work on. If it's not approved and we say it's too low a priority, we put it on a future opportunity. I'll call it a Christmas tree wish list of things that we consider when priorities have been met. And so this is a process. We are in the baby steps of implementation, but it is absolutely helping provide consistent information across all program areas in both agencies so that we can ask our service provider to service the things that are of highest importance to each agency.
Okay, Sarah mentioned about when we have work that goes into a size that makes it a project, then we have a process and are creating even a more stringent process for running those projects. We want to make sure that our projects are scalable and repeatable, that the processes are predictable and well-defined, and probably most important, that they're scope controlled. This work is done in conjunction with the State Office of the State CIO stage gate process, which I think you heard from Dr. Pettit early in the committee's work. And we work closely with them to make sure that they have the information that they need and that they have access to the artifacts that we're creating. Again, things like a business case, that we have done a feasibility study, that we are looking at the different alternatives that we're proposing. Every project that we have will have a steering committee, regular status reports, and quality oversight. We'll identify and manage risks, and we'll be transparent. And the success of our projects will be determined by evidence and deliverables. These are basic project requirements. And our goal, quite honestly, is that the projects that we have are predictable, repeatable, and actually dull and boring.
Before you go on, I'd like to talk about your priorities a bit more. Who's on the governing board that makes those priority decisions? Who is that?
Co-Chair Riley, it depends on each level. So the program IT governing bodies are generally chaired by program directors. In my agency, that would be somebody like Mike McCormick for aging and people with disabilities. It would be Kim Fredland for the self-sufficiency programs. So the program administrator is a voting member. It has representation from OIS in terms of the application development managers who support the applications in those areas. It may have representation from the people who operate our financial systems. So many of both departments' programs actually issue payments. And so in those cases, there are representatives from financial services. So those are all people inside of individual program areas. For the Department of Human Services, the agency IT governing body is our executive team. And so we sit at the executive team table and have cross-program prioritization conversations.
So is there a priorities list? Does that exist?
Co-chair Riley, we are in the process of creating that list, right? So I don't have one to produce for you today. We could take the existing list of projects that we report to the state CIO's office and LFO and put those in a priority order, but that is not representative of the total set of work that we're talking about. Kristen and I have a deep commitment to increase the amount of information that we provide to the state CIO's office and to legislative fiscal about all efforts, not just ones at the highest level of prioritization. And so I can't give you that whole list for every IT effort that we're doing now, but I expect if you were to invite us back in 6 months, we would have that list for you because each of these areas would be going through this process. So I can give it to you for the stuff that were major IT investments that we're reporting. Or we can come back and have a conversation about all efforts later.
Senator Witt, do you have something else?
Yes, actually, regarding that slide, if I understand that slide, there's at least 8 steps. And there may be committee oversight and analysis and acceptance of each one of those steps. How long do you think it takes to get from the program area identified need to the little green box on the right, lower right-hand corner, because that's what's important?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, it depends on the maturity of the individual program areas. So, for example, there's a unit inside of OIS that supports shared services for both agencies. That program-level governing body is super mature, has robust processes. For them to get an idea from initial conception to approved in the work queue could be just a couple weeks' time. For other areas where the program-level governing body is not as clear, or in places in our business areas where we have not done a good job articulating the front-end stuff to make sure that actually we're asking OIS to deliver something that has been articulated, it takes longer. And you want it to take longer because in the past we have not done a good job of articulating our requirements in a way that OIS can deliver on them. And so it's variable. I think in good cases, 2 weeks to 30 days. I think there are other cases, depending on the intensity of the business need that is being represented and the capacity of the people working on defining that need, it could take upwards of 90 days, 4 months maybe.
Thank you. I wish I shared your optimism. In an 8-step process, in 30 days, you'd have to have you'd have to make each step within about 2.5 days. Within 2 weeks, you'd have to make it about every other day. You must work in a different government than I'm used to.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I think, you know, that's my gold shining star. We clearly have a continuum of performance.
Okay, so in the spring of 2013, KPMG Consulting Company was hired to do a maturity assessment of the Office of Information Services. So Sarah just talked about different maturity levels of our governing groups. The assessment that we had done was built on the Capability Maturity Model Integration Framework, so CMMI. It's an industry standard for assessing and improving operations. And the goal of the framework is to facilitate the transition from chaotic and reactive processes to more formalized and standard approach to the way that you do work. So you can see up here that the framework uses a scale of 1 to 5, with a 1 indicating that an organization is in the initial step of a maturity continuum, and then going on up through the various levels to 5, which indicates an optimizing step. So when this assessment was done back in 2013, OIS's overall rating was less than a 1. Now, this really confirms, I think, what Sarah and I have seen as we've come in, and really helps to confirm the approach that we're taking to really try and put those foundational elements in place around governance, around standards and policies and procedures, so that we can start to deliver services in a predictable and repeatable manner. Really, in essence, we need to walk before we can run.
So the next few slides identify IT-related projects for both agencies. And the list that you see here represents DHS's IT-related projects in the 13-15 biennia. The first two projects have an asterisk, which indicate that they are closed already or in the process of closing, and we expect to finish the closure of them in the current biennia. The remaining projects continue into the next biennia, assuming legislative budget support is approved. So the first project on the list, case management online, was a project to replace the case management system for aging and people with disabilities using the Oracle framework. That project was closed down due to an evaluation that the agency did that recommended abandoning that technology for future use. The child care billing and tracking system was a project to implement enhanced billing and time and attendance for child care providers. And that project is in the process of being closed down because our federal funding partners for child care recently changed the business requirements of that program significantly. And this project and the being implemented does not meet those needs. And so per our commitment to stopping things when they are not making forward progress, we're closing that project. The statewide adult abuse data and report writing system has been planning work that the Department of Human Services has been undertaking for a new system that will monitor abuse, adult abuse referrals in real time. Electronic data management system is formerly a part of the IT modernization effort at the Department of Human Services, which is now funded by program dollars and seeks to increase the capacity for electronic case information to be stored, making for less manual process, touching of paper files in our self-sufficiency and aging and people with disability programs. Then provider time capture is a project that we're in the initial planning stages for in order to implement federal Department of Labor rules around time and attendance for home care workers. Now it gets a little interesting. So in addition to my role as the DHS COO for technology, I also am on job rotation for the Oregon Health Authority in the capacity of MAGI Medicaid system transfer project. So I'm taking off my DHS hat for just a minute and speaking on behalf of the Oregon Health Authority. In this capacity, I have led both the MAGI Medicaid transition to OHA project and its successor, MAGI Medicaid system transfer project. When we get to the 15-17 OHA projects, I'll speak in specific detail about the Medicaid system transfer project.
Okay, the next project on the list, Behavioral Health Integration Project, or BHIP as we call it, is an integrated client information system that we're implementing for Oregon, for the Oregon State Hospital. And this project is in the final stages and is due to complete later this year. For MMIS, we have several projects that we're working on. Three of these, the 5010, ICD-10, and the last one there on the list, the Transform Medicaid Statistical Information System, are all federal requirements from our federal partner, CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The other one on here, disaster recovery, that's the last piece of a requirement that we have for the certification of our MMIS or Medicaid Management Information System. Next on the list, MAPR or Medical Assistance Provider Incentive Repository is a project that is now complete, and this was a program that was created under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 that established a program to provide incentive payments for providers for the adoption and meaningful use of electronic health records, and that is now operational. WIC EBT is the next one on the list. This is our program for women, infant, and children. And this effort is to replace the current paper vouchers for distribution of WIC food benefits. and we're in contract negotiations currently.
Senator Whitsitt?
With the vendor.
Thank you. I'm particularly interested in the electronic debit card situation. I think WIC is on the Oregon Trail card, too. The fraud in that system is rampant, and what will this new system do to help track that? To give you an example, I just recently flew down to McAllen, Texas for education thing and used my credit card in down in that South Texas town, and within 10 minutes my phone rang, you know, the MasterCard wanted to know, was I in McAllen, Texas? Yet we have no way of tracking even who carries those cards, what they're buying with them. So is this going to be an effort to create some accountability on the part of the user, or are we just doing something here? Because then that's where there's I would estimate the fraud probably in excess of $50 million in Oregon.
Senator Riley, Senator Whitsitt, members of the committee, this is a tough one. I can't really speak to the accountabilities for the users of the card because I'm on the technology side. I know that, you know, certainly from a technology perspective, we'll be looking and working with our vendor to make sure that we have appropriate security protocols in place.
Follow-up.
Yeah.
I don't know that answered the question. I mean, the flat-out question is, will this new IT system in any way help OHA to and prevent the rampant fraud on the EBT cards?
Senator Riley, Senator Whitsitt, we'd have to get back to you on that one. I can't speak to how that will be done through this system.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the list, COMPASS, or the Community Outcome Management and Performance Accountability System. This is a new system for our addictions and mental health program, which will allow for greater accountability and better outcome tracking. And this project is also due to complete this summer. And then on the list, the Home Visiting Data System. This is a care coordination and referral management system for use by a variety of organizations that are delivering early childhood home visiting services within Oregon. And we signed a contract with a vendor in September of this last year, and that is scheduled for completion later this year. And then last on the list here, common credentialing. So this is part of our Oregon Health Information Technology Program to create a way to centralize and streamline the credentialing process for healthcare organizations. There has been an RFI initiated, and there are 24 known vendors with off-the-shelf solutions, and the project is now preparing for an RFP.
So there are a multitude of projects that are in service to both agencies because they're either infrastructure related or service both sets of programs. So this list represents the projects that we undertook in 2013-2015. Both agencies have been replacing approximately 20% of their PCs per year and upgrading the remainder of their PCs from Windows XP to Windows 7. Those are separate projects that are currently underway. We successfully completed a project that increased bandwidth to field offices, predominantly for DHS, but also for OHA locations. We did a enhancement to the Joint Agency Travel Reimbursement System called TRIPS. That project is completed. And then we have underway a planning effort for a project we call REAL-D, which is designed to support tracking of race, ethnicity, language and disability data elements across systems used by DHS and OHA in response to legislation that this body passed.
Can you tell me a little bit about your bandwidth upgrade? What was that about and how did that occur?
Senator Riley, this was an effort to try to create a minimum standard for the connectivity for all of our offices across the state. And so we brought all of our offices up to a minimum level of bandwidth.
And how did you do that?
oh, how did we do that? Mm-hmm. Well, we worked with the Enterprise Technology Services, which is the state data center. We work very closely with them. They're an extension of our services. And then we also worked with some of the local community providers of bandwidth when we weren't able to get out there with the statewide network.
Thank you.
I'm going to speak to the first project here. So in addition to the OHA in-flight projects that will continue from 2013-2015, OHA will undertake three new projects funded from its proposed base budget. So Medicaid System Transfer Project Director, I think you all are aware that in November of 2014, the state decided to abandon the Health Insurance Exchange Information Technology and to transfer the Kentucky Magi Medicaid System of Record to Oregon for use by the Oregon Health Authority. You might ask, well, if we're using the federal government website, why do we also need a Oregon solution? Both the Federal Affordable Care Act legislation and federal Medicaid law requires OHA as the state's single Medicaid agency to provide a front door so that Oregonians can seek services from OHA and Medicaid coverage directly without going to the federal government.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Ms. Miller, am I reading that right, that we're going to spend yet another $63 million on this project?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, yes, $62.9 million of money is budgeted for the transfer system project. That is 90-10 approved, so roughly $6.29 million of state funds and the remainder in federal funds.
Thank you.
The other two projects here on the list...
Representative Nearman.
So I'm going to pick up on what Senator Whitsitt's doing. So, correct me if I'm wrong. That what we're, we abandoned Cover Oregon, but in order to keep the subsidies alive, we have to have the front end, like you said there. So that seems to me like half $1 million rather than $62 million or whatever, something like that. What is the scope, what's the extent of that project there? If it's not, if it's just a front end, that seems pretty simple.
Co-Chair Riley, Representative Nearman, please, I perhaps oversimplified the front end. In fact, the state is required to have an online application that gathers necessary data elements for people to determine their eligibility for Medicaid. It has to have a rules engine, which has all of the applicable rules in it to take the information that an applicant provides and determine whether they're eligible or not. It has to be able to interface with a number of systems, both at the Federal Data Services Hub, locally in our state unemployment insurance wage file at the Employment Department, and with the Medicaid information system. It has to be able to secure people's information, so not just I'm going to go to a website and randomly enter my information. I have to create an account. I have to have a logon. I have to identity proof. I am who I say I am, so that you can adequately determine benefits. And then I have to enroll in Medicaid. So it's not just a front door. And in fact, the system from Kentucky has both a self-service portal that Oregonians can use directly and a back-end worker portal for people who call into OHA's call center and want to make an application over the phone, who submit an application by mail, and that has to be entered into the technology solution. So in fact, the $62.9 million is moving of the Kentucky system to Oregon. It is making Oregon necessary specifications to meet our program needs. It includes a new security solution, because the Kentucky security solution was not available for us to transfer, and a new document management imaging. And so that scope in its entirety is what is expected to cost $62 million.
Thank you.
Oh. Senator Whitsitt.
So if I understand, Ms. Miller, that you're creating a hybrid between essentially a off-the-shelf system out of Kentucky and something that OHA is building to make it work in Oregon.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, in fact, we're making very little customization to the core application from Kentucky. There are a few places where we have to modify the business rules because our Medicaid program allows a different level than Kentucky does. But there are several areas of what we call enterprise services that were available from the IT, centralized IT organization in Kentucky that are not available in Oregon. There is not a centralized identity and access management solution that could be utilized. So a large chunk of this scope of work is about creating that solution. We use a process inside of DHS and OHA right now for document management called IRMS, IRMS, where we scan paper applications and make them available in the case file. That solution is different than Kentucky's solution, and so we have to make modifications to that system to connect it to the Kentucky application. And then there are a large number of modifications that have to be made in order to take the eligibility decision that this system makes and enroll it in Oregon's MMIS, which is different than Kentucky's. So in terms of changes to the core application, actually very small. It's really a system transfer project. But there are component integrated services that we have to build to support it.
Ms. Miller-Jones, how much of this $62.9 million is actually a purchase price for the system? How much of it is roughly, in the ballpark, how much of it is for modifications? And then what will be the ongoing cost on a biennial basis for, are you buying this system or are you leasing this system? Is there going to be an ongoing cost and what will that be?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I think I can answer a couple of those questions. I probably have to follow up on the detail of a couple sub-questions. Here's what I can tell you. We pay the state of Kentucky exactly $0 to move this system. Systems that are paid for with CMS dollars are available in the public domain. And so the work that Kentucky paid their system integrator to develop that system gets given to us for no cost. In terms of the split between work that we are paying our system integrator to do to make changes to the system, I can't give you a representation of what that percentage split is about enterprise services off of core application. I'd rather go back and check my numbers instead of saying something incorrectly. But in terms of ongoing operational expenditures, we also will have to make some estimates about that. But in large generalizations, I would say we have a significant amount of money that we're paying to our system integrator to make the enterprise services work. There are about $10 to $12 million of hardware and software purchases, but those are all being done in coordination with DAS's oversight and the enterprise technology services. This system will live at our state data center. It will not be outsourced hosted by a third-party vendor, so we don't have that same level of ongoing costs. The software purchases that we're making are being licensed so that OHA could use them for other projects or so that the Department of Human Services could use them for other projects and potentially for use by other agencies. So in terms of the exact specific amount per biennia, I'll have to get back to you.
Okay. Just one follow-up. So if it's going to be housed at DAS, with the CINIC, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So DAS, as you know, has a penchant for their estate government service charges.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get those numbers, if you would make available to the committee, not just what's going to cost outside, but what the cost inside of the government is going to be, because that's what I think is that's the way that's being structured, as I understand it, probably the primary ongoing cost is going to be the cost that DAS charges Oregon Health Authority.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, you're exactly correct. And what I will provide back to the committee is the actual, quote, estimate that the State Data Center provided to the Oregon Health Authority about ongoing costs.
Okay, so the other two projects that are planned for OHA in the 2015-2017 biennium, the first is called Care Assist. This is a project to replace an existing application that tracks and monitors HIV data. And then the last one on the list here is with our Office of Health IT. And this is, there are three projects here, common credentialing, provider directory, and clinical quality metrics. The common credentialing I talked to earlier, provider directory will provide healthcare organizations, providers, and state local agencies in Oregon with an accurate and comprehensive directory of providers. And then the last one here, the Clinical Quality Metrics Registry will enable providers to be able to, and CCOs.
Coordinated care organizations.
Coordinated care organizations to submit their data for the CCO metrics.
So the next slide represents the agency budget requests for shared projects or for the Department of Human Services in the governor's 2015-2017 governor's budget. So the first project there is that project that I started talking about that both agencies had done planning work. We call it REAL Plus D. It seeks to create a master client data. You heard Kristen talk about one of the enabling strategies of this strategic technology plan is a comprehensive view of the client. This project seeks to have an understanding about the comprehensive view of a client as it relates to their race, ethnicity, language, and disability. Those data elements are particularly important to the Oregon Health Authority in order to be able to address health inequities that customers might experience or disparities that they experience as a part of their race or ethnicity. And on the DHS side, it's important for us for service equity. We want to make sure that all populations are adequately served by the work that we do. And so that request is for $3.5 million and assumes $1 million of capital finance. The Adult Protective Services or Statewide Adult Abuse and Report Writing System is $3.4 million in the governor's budget and assumes $2 million in capital finance. And then DHS has begun planning work for the next eligibility determination system, right? So when I have my OHA hat on for you, I'm talking about MAGI Medicaid. MAGI is an acronym that stands for Modified Adjusted Gross Income. It's income-related Medicaid, so medical services that you qualify for based on your income level. There are a number of Medicaid services that are not income-related. We call those non-MAGI Medicaid programs. And so the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services this fall announced a continuation of 90-10 enhanced funding for eligibility systems. And so DHS said, okay, if we're going to pick the next project after MAGI Medicaid, we think it should be a non-MAGI Medicaid eligibility determination because that project would be eligible for 90-10 financing. And so we have a pre-approved federal match to support this $7.5 million request at 90-10 should the legislature allow us to proceed with that project.
Okay, so in conclusion, what you heard from us today was a little about the DHS OHA Shared Services Organization for Technology, the Office of Information Services. We talked a little bit about the programs that we serve, and we shared with you some of the challenges that we deal with every day and the complexities of our organization. What we also hope that you heard today is a commitment to putting in place the changes and structures to make possible the successful delivery of IT solutions that we know you expect of us, that our agencies need, and in service to the clients that our agencies serve. We have the support and leadership of both the OHA and DHS leadership teams, and you have the commitment from us to provide the leadership on the ground. Things aren't going to change overnight. We're still driving a very large ship here. But what you will see is incremental change. First, as we implement the foundations of governance, and then as we put in place the best practices of project management. With solid, repeatable structures in place and a handle on our priorities, we will start planning for the future. So really of moving the balance scale from the existing work and keeping our existing systems running to the new work. I'm confident that the Office of Information Services can be successful in delivering the IT solutions that you expect and in support of our agencies and the clients that we serve. We're committed to making this happen, and I believe it's what every staff member in the Office of Information Services strives to do every day. We have talented and dedicated staff in OIS that are willing and ready to do their best work. They need a vision, clear direction, and the structures, tools, and training to do their jobs.
That's the end of our prepared testimony. Happy to take any additional questions.
Thank you. I have a couple. I'm still back on priorities. Okay?
That's great. Happy to be there with you.
And when we start looking at priorities, you're talking about a dedicated group within your organization for each project area. Is that correct?
Co-Chair Riley, I wouldn't represent it that way. Actually, the purpose of the prioritization exercise is for the business to identify what the priorities are inside of individual systems, because in some cases there are actually application experts who work on particular systems. But a large part of the work that OIS does has a skill set to cross systems. And so we need to do a better job from a business perspective of saying, don't invest all your resources in this one area, or, hey, we have this new need in another area. How can we reallocate OIS's resources to meet the highest priority work?
So I would like to see a breakout of how many people are assigned to a particular project area in all of those areas, and how many of your people in various levels, analysts, project managers, programmers, are available for you work across the enterprise. I think there are a couple more questions.
Happy to bring that back, Senator.
Thank you. Did you have another one?
I do, actually. A couple. Thank you, Mr. Chair Riley. If I understand, then the DHS ask is for about $108 million all funds plus another $3 million in coupons.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I learned in General Government Committee not to check a senator's math, so if he says it's that amount, then it's that amount. He adds faster than I do.
The second question, to what extent was the Oregon Health Authority or the DHS staff involved in Cover Oregon?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, that is a long story, which I am happy to share a portion of here. But in general, right, I mean, just big picture themes. The Health Insurance Exchange was first created, Office of Information Services was the IT provider that started the development work. So the initial contracts that led to the Cover Oregon Exchange were let by the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. When Cover Oregon, the legal entity, got created and they took over the development, I think in May or so of 2013, then predominantly OHA and DHS's responsibilities stopped for the system because they were only an IT provider of service to Cover Oregon, the public corporation. Now, it's important to understand that the state has to continue to operate the Cover Oregon system until the Kentucky system comes in terms of being able to process its MAGI Medicaid decisions. And so now we have a use of the Cover Oregon system for the purposes of processing MAGI Medicaid determinations. But at the highest level, that's a representation of involvement.
Didn't I understand you answered the OHA DHS staff pretty well took care of it, setting the program up until sometime in the fall of 2013.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I think it was actually in early 2013.
And then when was the go live date supposed to be on that?
October 1 of 2013.
So the OHA DHS staff must have pretty much put the system together then, because you're only talking about a few months difference there.
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, we are crossing into a place that I am uncomfortable offering testimony about as in response to the litigation that's going on. We'd be happy to come back with some additional information after we consult our attorneys, if you'd like.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. Ms. Miller, there was something that you said in the last few minutes about the skill set to cross systems. I can envision a few ways to look at what we mean by skill set. Seems like in the information systems and technology area, it's important to have people, now I'm way out of my depth here, but people who know how to be the fastest and quickest at coding or designing, but also that what they're designing is going to be fast and quick. What is the most efficient at using system resources and not gobbling up too much processing or transmitting time? So there are certain things that you aim for, I'm sure, mm-hmm. that are very technical with regard to IT. It's not only fastest and quickest, but which technique might be the longest lasting mm-hmm. as either that system or things that you interface with change. So which might be the most lasting approach? But then again, there's another skill set that I think we haven't paid enough attention to, and that is understanding the business case, mm-hmm. which is, oh, yeah, I can write the fastest, quickest lines to do thus and such, but maybe that isn't what we should have been doing. So which of those skill sets are you talking about?
Coach O'Reilly, Coach R. Nathanson, I think, in fact, you hit the nail on the head. Certainly, I'll answer from a business perspective and then offer Kristen an opportunity to share from a technology perspective. Fundamentally, I don't think OIS has positions that are designed to understand the business need and to articulate it appropriately in a business case. I think the expectation has been that agency program staff will do that. In DHS, there's also this other organization we call IT Business Services, which is a place where we have some of our business analysts together. So when I hear you talking about really understanding the business need, understanding what the program objective is, and being able to articulate that in a thought out business case, very much from my perspective and my agency's perspective, that is business analyst skills and project delivery, right? That is business oriented, not just in service to the technology. And so those are functions that in my long-term role as the Department of Human Services COO for technology, that's the part of the organization I'll have long-term responsibility for that sits squarely between program and our IT service providers, specifically to be a translator, for example, to help really articulate what the impacts are and talk to the technologists about when you have architectural choices to make. Do you do it in the fastest, quickest line of code, or do you do it in the new emerging technology, which has a life cycle longer than your career in state government, perhaps, right? So that's what I meant, certainly from the chair I sit in. I don't know if Kristen has a different opinion.
Co-Chair Riley, Representative Nathanson, I would totally agree. The better we can get at articulating our needs at the upfront ask by our business partners, the better chance we have as technologists to actually deliver that solution. So absolutely, I would agree. And that really is where the partnership that Sarah and I come together around in helping to make sure that we're delivering successful solutions.
Thank you. One just brief closing comment. I think there are probably times when we've designed something where the technology in theory works, but it didn't necessarily do us the best that we should have done for getting the business right to serve Oregonians or even just to further the department's goals.
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, we share a long list with you.
Yeah, and just as a comment on that, this happens in all agencies. It's not just the state government. Big corporations have the same problem. And any time that the business analysts work in one area and the technicians in another area, there's always that translation problem. Who writes the specs?
Co-Chair Riley, it depends on the different program areas. In program areas where there are business analysts, those folks have program responsibility and do it. In program areas where we don't have business analysts or the Oregon Health Authority doesn't have business analysts, then people who work in Kristen's business engagement services try to help document the specifications. It's not consistent in the agency currently.
Okay.
We're working towards that.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Appreciate the time.
And I think that's our meeting for today. So if there's nothing else for the good of the group, we're adjourned. The group, we're adjourned.